You may be surprised that the richest person of all time lived in the 15th and 16th centuries. Jacob Bugger, who was Europe's most successful and ruthless financier, he did it by gaining the allegiance of an emperor and the Vatican. But surprisingly, few people are familiar with his name today. So with hopes of making him a better known historical figure, Greg Steinmetz has written The Richest Man Who Ever Lived, The Life and Times of Jacob Bugger. It's published by Simon & Schuster. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Steinmetz to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
You were a journalist for 15 years and then became a securities analyst. Now, is this book a way of merging your two interests?
Yeah. I've been writing about business in one way or another for 30 years, including in my present position. And Bugger was someone who I'd heard about when I was a reporter, actually, in Germany for the Wall Street Journal. And when I went to look for a book about him in English, I couldn't find one. So I decided to do it myself, even though I was no longer a journalist.
Well, don't many people claim that Mansa Musa of Mali was the richest man who ever lived? Well, do we have any idea of what made one person richer than the other at this time?
What I did is I used a method that I came across on a front page story in the New York Times maybe 10 years ago, in which they divided a person's wealth into the size of the economy at the time of his death. And by that measure, Rockefeller came in first and Bill Gates came in number 39th. So I did the same thing with Bugger and came up with the figure $400 billion, which compares to Gates now is around $80 billion.
And he owned close to 2% of the European GDP.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. And yet so few people know about him. At the time, he was called Jacob Bugger of the Lily, Jacob Bugger the Rich.
Yeah.
How did he get so many different names?
Well, the Lily was the symbol that they put on the family crest, which they bought from the emperor to give themselves a little bit of marketing. The Rich, in those days, people had these sort of nicknames. He did business with Frederick the Fat, with Sigmund Richenkoins, with Maximilian the Last Knight, and he was Bugger the Rich.
He was a descendant of a peasant, but his parents were well off because they were in the textile business?
Yeah. He was third generation, and in those days, you didn't sit in your garage and invent a company that would then sell products all over the world. And it was a generational accomplishment.
Was he expected to go into the family business?
Originally, he was targeted for the priesthood because he was the 10th of 11 children, and they didn't need him in the family business. But after some of his brothers died, they did need him.
And then he apprenticed in finance. His mother arranged that?
Yeah, he went to Venice, which was the Harvard Business School of the day, where he learned what he needed to know about accounting and negotiation and contracts.
Did his financial sensibilities come easily to him, or was he just taught well?
He was a natural. He had everything that it took. He had great business judgment. He had nerves of steel. He was ruthless.
Now, he's Austrian?
He's German.
Augsburg. Yeah.
Augsburg is a suburb of Munich.
But a lot of his dealings are connected to Italy.
Yeah, they are. Italy was the largest economy in Europe at the time because of the spice trade, which made Venice, put Venice on the map. They brought over all the spices from India. And in order to buy those spices, people needed money. And money in those days was silver. The silver was in Austria. It was controlled by the Habsburgs. And Bugger ended up bankrolling them when no one else was willing to go near them.
He had to get into the mining industry through the local ruler, Archduke Sigmund.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do to get into his good graces?
Well, Sigmund had a crazy idea of going to war with Venice and trying to recapture some disputed border towns. Venice could crush Sigmund at any time they wanted. They demanded a very large ransom to call off the war. None of Sigmund's traditional bankers were there for him because they thought Sigmund was finished. That's when Bugger ran around to his friends and family, risked everything he had, risked everything his friends and family had, risked debtor's prison, and made an enormous loan to Sigmund that kept him afloat.
Since he was a small banker at the time, couldn't Sigmund have chosen not to repay him?
He could have, but then there's the credibility issue. Who is going to loan money again to someone who doesn't pay his debt? It happened all the time, but in this case, Sigmund thought, well, I might need Fugger again, so let's pay him back.
And they developed a working relationship,
yes,
including creating a new currency?
Well, Sigmund came up, because he had so much silver, he was able to come up with a coin that was pure in silver. And because it was pure rather than being diluted with base metals, it caught on. That was called the Sigmund Guldener, but by the time it got to Germany, it was called the Thaler, and by the time it got to the Netherlands, it was called the Dollar.
And that's where we get the word the dollar.
Exactly.
He had a relationship with an even more powerful family, the Habsburgs.
Mm-hmm.
That through his experiences in Venice?
Well, the Habsburgs, Sigmund was a Habsburg himself, but of the lesser branch, not the branch that controlled Vienna, but the Tyrol. And the Habsburgs from Vienna pushed Sigmund out of the Tyrol, took it over for themselves, got all the silver mines, and with that they got Fugger.
And Fugger had to choose between Maximilian I, the emperor,
mm-hmm.
and Sigmund, and he chose Maximilian.
He chose Maximilian.
Betrayed the man who had really helped him become very rich.
Yes, he did. But he knew that Maximilian, who was on his way to becoming Holy Roman Emperor, could do a lot more for him. And they were the same age. They were born within 2 weeks of each other. They had a lot in common.
You say that Fugger was innovative for his time. One banking habit he developed was borrowing money by opening savings accounts for people. Mm-hmm. Was he the first to do that?
He was one of the first. They were already doing banking like this in Venice and Florence. He was one of the first to do it north of the Alps. And again, this was at a time when loaning money, which is what a depositor is doing when he puts money in the bank, you weren't allowed to charge interest on it. So all of this was new to Christian Europe, Christians lending to Christians.
It's one of the reasons that many of the bankers were Jewish, because it was considered a sin to profit from banking.
Yeah. Jesus said, lend and expect nothing in return. That was a challenge for Christian bankers.
Fugger also created the first news service.
Yeah. He recognized the value of inside information, so he paid couriers enormous amounts to race to him with the latest information, gossip, pricing information, whatever it was. And he used this information to gain advantage on his customers and his competitors.
My guest is Greg Steinmetz. His book, The Richest Man Who Ever Lived, The Life and Times of Jakob Fugger, with a painting on the cover by Dürer. So he was painted by one of the most important artists of the time.
Yes, he was. Some people say that Dürer surpassed the Italians in his mastery of the craft. And Dürer lived up the road in Nuremberg. And at the Imperial Diet in 1519, or rather 1517, he came down and painted all the glitterati, and Fugger was one of them.
Although he did banking for the Habsburgs, it looks like Fugger and Maximilian worked together rather than Fugger working for him. Is that was Fugger able to stand up to him?
Fugger did not believe that the fact that he was a commoner made him any less worthy than anyone else. And he recognized that if he had made himself indispensable to the Habsburgs would never turn their back on him.
On the other hand, he had a fair number of banking rivals who also had the ear of Maximilian.
Yeah, but no one could produce as much money as quickly with such reliability as Fugger.
One of Fugger's main financial successes was in selling copper, and he used that to destroy some of his rivals?
His rivals in Augsburg, after realizing that they couldn't beat Fugger, decided to join him and form a copper cartel to jack up prices. Well, he used that against them. Once the cartel was formed and they began shipping copper, Fugger flooded the market with copper and put a big dent in their businesses and grabbed a lot of their business. He was unable to bankrupt any of them, but he came pretty close.
Didn't they ask Maximilian to punish Fugger?
They asked Maximilian to punish Fugger, and Maximilian said, I admire your cleverness, and let's be partners ourselves. And Fugger said, no, I don't want to do that. I'll be your banker, but I don't want to go into business with you.
Fugger also didn't marry until rather late in life, 38. Men at that time married in their early 20s.
It was a family tradition to marry late, and I don't know exactly why that was, but I think it had something to do with they were so consumed by making money that they just didn't have time.
He wanted to have an heir. He married a woman who was 20 years younger than he, 18 years old. They never had children. Did he have any children outside of the marriage?
He had an illegitimate daughter whose direct descendants are still alive. In fact, one of them's a banker in Stuttgart.
Did the fortune ever last past him?
It still lasts.
So it's kind of like the Rothschilds?
Yeah. 500 years later, he created this housing project. Maybe we're going to get to that. The world's first affordable housing project in Augsburg. It's called the Fuggerei. It's still funded by timber on land that Fugger bought 500 years ago.
Later on in his career, he became a banker for the Vatican while he was working for Maximilian. Maximilian wanted to go to Rome to be crowned emperor of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah.
And he wanted Fugger to help him. What happened?
Maximilian believed that to be a legitimate emperor, it wasn't enough to have been voted into office, as it were. It's like the College of Cardinals. You had these electors who voted for the emperor. It wasn't enough to have their votes, but he had to have the divine aura that came with having the crown placed on his head in Rome. So in order to get to Rome, he would have had to fight his way there, because any territory through which he passed, the people would think that he was doing a land grab and they would fight back. So he needed Fugger's money to march on Rome. Fugger thought that was foolhardy, and he gave Maximilian enough to satisfy the minimal obligations, but not enough to make it all the way to Rome.
And so what happened with his relationship with the Habsburgs? Because he was using his support for the Habsburgs to be a decisive influence on European politics at the time.
Yeah.
This makes him sound very modern.
Yes.
He was buying offices for people, and he was buying political influence.
Yeah. And it was all direct. There was nothing under the table. The bribes were all above board. Everyone knew what was going on. And the people who were receiving the money, they thought, well, I'm in this position of power. I'm in a position to receive bribes, and I'm going to exploit that.
Didn't he use bribes as a way to become the lead banker for the Vatican? He was the first non-Italian to be the lead banker for the Vatican?
God's a banker. That's right.
How did that happen? Was it just a bribe that got him the job?
Again, he had more money than anyone, so he could loan more to the popes. He also had a very efficient branch network. So in order to transfer money from one city to another, and there was a lot of money coming over the Alps from Germany and Scandinavia to Rome, Fugger didn't have to load the gold into wagons and ship it to Rome. He could just do debit and crediting of accounts between his various branches.
He also made considerable contributions to secure the election of the Spanish king, Charles V, to become Holy Roman Empire emperor. So he was connected all over Europe. In his time, many people like the Borgias were not above murdering their enemies as a way to advance professionally and socially. It's been suggested by the historian Gottfried von Polnitz that Fugger murdered some rivals.
One of his rivals, yeah. And the evidence is really thin on that, but it comes down to the fact that there is no record of these people's death, what really happened. And Fugger had made some comments to suggest that he might have been behind this.
Mm. Do you think that if he were alive today, he would have gone into politics?
No. He did his best to avoid direct involvement in politics. He could have been mayor of Augsburg. He could have been like the Medicis and taken over Augsburg. But instead, he chose to be the guy behind the curtain because his primary interest wasn't power. It was making money. He wanted to make as much money as he could.
Although he only had a child out of wedlock, how did he try to continue the family legacy?
Well, he had nephews. And he passed the business on to his nephews after he died.
Do we see his impact on our current financial system?
Well, he's the one who made it possible for Christians to loan money with interest. And you see in Islamic finance today, Islamic banks aren't allowed to charge interest. The same prohibition that the church had 500 years ago.
Although earlier, Giotto painted great murals in Padua for a Christian banking family that was kind of trying to buy their way into heaven.
Yeah, and the Christian bankers, just like Islamic bankers today, would find ways around the restrictions, calling interest, penalties, service charges, whatever. But Fugger went to the Pope and said, enough of this. And he had tremendous influence with the Pope. And the Pope said, it's okay to loan money at interest if you're a Christian, if there is risk involved. Well, what loan doesn't involve risk?
Considering his importance and his major role in the politics and the finances of the day, why do you think so few people know about him? You said he's well known in Germany, but not elsewhere?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And it's one I'm still wrestling with. Maybe because he wasn't – people are remembered for patronage more than wealth. Fugger, Dürer painted him, but he wasn't a great patron of the arts. All his money went into making more money. That's part of it. Also, the record on him is very thin. Martin Luther, who is his contemporary, wrote down his every thought. He would be a blogger today. Fugger, on the other hand, covered his tracks.
What's next for you, another biography?
Well, the – Fugger was a product of the Renaissance. The Renaissance, it took me a long time to learn all the background needed to write this book, so I'm hoping to leverage some of that knowledge, maybe find something else to do, but nothing definite yet.
Meanwhile, we have this book, The Richest Man Who Ever Lived, The Life and Times of Jacob Fugger. It is published by Simon & Schuster, and my great thanks to Greg Steinmetz for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you very much, Leonard.